This is a Rural Lands Review work session on January 22nd, 2014.
So to get started, we're going to go around the room and introduce ourselves. Excuse me, David. I know you're busy, but...
Are you recording on?
Take it out.
Yes, it is.
Good morning. You want to start off?
Oh, we have stereo, not David.
Sure. Yeah, I'm Mark McCauley, County Administrator.
And I'm Oliver Ojak of Clark County Community Planning Director.
I'm Chris Cook, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney.
Peter Van Ortwick, Assessor.
Gordy Euler, Clark County Community Planning.
David Nador, County Commissioner.
Tom Milkey, County Commissioner.
Steve Stewart, County Commissioner.
Mary Powell, Clark County Commission.
Ken Perreault, Clark County GIS.
Yes, Commissioner. Good morning, Commissioners. I will start off. This is going to be a team effort. I'm going to make opening remarks, turn it over to Gordy and Jose. But before I do that, let me quickly thank our GIS staff. They really worked very hard with us on this. And also Mary Kells with her staff. And our prosecuting attorney's office staff. I am very pleased. I've met with Pete on a couple of occasions, and I'm glad that he's here. That is the county assessor to discuss some potential tax implications as the board considered the policy options. So what we are going to do today, I know we have a very limited time, what we are going to do quickly today is present to the commissioners the results of the preference census that staff conducted at the direction of the commissioners. As I indicated, we are going to review certain policy options and get direction from the board. Pete is here as we review and discuss the potential policy options. I think Pete is going to chime in to brief the board or at least discuss the potential tax implication depending on what option the board decide that we follow. Gordy will provide an overview of what we've done since we started this project, and then Jose will walk us through the result of the preference survey. We have handouts. This is a brief summary of the results. You should have a copy of that. We also have the PowerPoint presentation available for folks to pick up or follow us. So I will then quickly turn this over to Gordy to just give us a quick summary of what has occurred since we started this project. Gordy?
And one more thing before Gordy starts off. Do we have anybody here from the task force? The rural task force?
No.
I don't know anybody. Okay, Gordy.
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. Again, Gordy Euler, Community Planning. I don't know what I was thinking of when I only booked this for a half an hour, but we'll talk fast and we'll try to get through this. So this is another in a number of work sessions that we've had with the board on the Rural Lands Project. Briefly, the Rural Lands Study started as a result of the 2007 Comprehensive Plan. The board at that time indicated that we should take a look at some of what's happening in rural areas and decide if we want to make any changes. So a lot's happened. We have had a task force. They met for a number of meetings in 2009-2010, culminating with, I thought it was a great meeting with the board, joint meeting with the board. I know two of you were there for that, and the task force. We've accomplished a number of things, code changes through the Brock process, including our code process. There are, however, a number of recommendations that the task force made that were not addressable through code changes, and that's what brings us into the next phase of sort of the rural lands review. We've had a work session with you before. We talked about a number of things like transfer of development rights, clustering, smaller parcel sizes for resource lands, and those kind of things. We talked about homesteading as an option, but have to drop that for a variety of reasons. So this work session is to focus on one aspect of the task force recommendation, which was to look at potentially going to smaller parcel size for ag and forest lands in the county. And in order to accomplish that, we did what's been called a preference census. And what we did there was to devise a couple of questions and identify all property owners of ag land or forest 40 zone land greater than ag land greater than 10 acres, forest land greater than 20 acres, and sent them a letter asking their preferences. And at this point, if there's no further questions, I'm going to turn it over to Jose, who will kind of explain our methodology and what we found.
Thanks, Gordy. Jose Alvarez, Community Planning. So as Gordy mentioned, we sent out letters and postcards to property owners in the Ag 20 and FR 40 zones. For the Ag 20 with at least 10 acres, that was a total of 679 property owners. For the FR40 zone, with at least 20 acres, that was 400 property owners. Essentially, there were two questions. For both the Ag 20 and FR40, would you want to keep the current zoning of either ag or forest, or would you prefer a smaller lot size? For ag, it was a 10-acre minimum. For forest, it was a 20-acre minimum. The second question was whether you prefer the flexibility of clustering new lots on the corner of your property. I just wanted to say, when we sent out the mailing, we had 1,079 to send out to. We got 9 responses that weren't, that we couldn't deliver. Didn't have the sufficient address, so essentially the denominator is 1,070. So the results. I'm going to start with the Ag 20. So the green is people who prefer the smaller zoning. So there were 300 folks who responded that wanted the smaller zoning in the Ag 20, and 118 who wanted to remain the same. For the second question, that preferred clustering, 273 of those preferred clustering, and 126 did not. There's a difference in the total numbers between the two. When we sent out the postcard, we did get about 80 plus responses that only chose one option or the other. When they filled out the census online, they didn't have the option of just answering one question. So when we did that manually, we made that adjustment, and you'll see that reflected in some of the maps. So for the Forest 40, it was 82% wanted to have the smaller zoning. It was 165, 35 that didn't. For the clustering, it was 136 that wanted clustering, 51 didn't, so 72% on that. The second cut we looked at was looking at properties that were eligible for dividing. So for the Act 20, if you had 20 acres or more and we were considering a 10-acre minimum, you could then further divide that. For the FR 40, it was a 40-acre minimum that you could divide that into 220s. So just looking at those folks, there was 248 that preferred the smaller zoning, 73%, 90 that didn't. This is totally for the ag. So there's 207 that prefer the smaller lot size, and 78 wanted to stay with what they had. dropped down to 69% for the clustering. For the FR40, we got a higher percentage, 41 that wanted, 12 that didn't. The total of FR40 properties that were eligible for this was just under 100, about 99. So that's why the numbers are smaller. 30 that did want, 33 that wanted the cluster, 14 that did. So the next thing I wanted to show you was the how this looked on the map.
Commissioners, while Jose is doing that, I want to apologize for those that received the PowerPoint presentation. There are some blank spaces. That's where these maps and the graphs should have gone, but we didn't have it on our handout. So I apologize. We can make this available and post it after the work session with the maps attached and the graphs.
They're already on the website.
Yes.
Links are on the PowerPoint.
Thank you.
So this is map of the county with the urban growth areas for most of for all of the jurisdictions. So for the rural census, all of the respondents, the green is the people who prefer the smaller lot size. The red are those that want to stay the same. The gray are the ones that did not respond. So essentially for the Ag 20, we had a 62% response rate. For the FR 40, it was 50%. So the next layer is the clustering. I'll zoom in to give you an idea of what that means. So this, the green with the green stripes is they want a smaller lot size and they prefer clustering. The green with the reddish pink stripe, they prefer the smaller lot size but don't want to cluster. The red is wanting to maintain the current lot size and don't want to cluster. There's an example here where they didn't respond to a preference for lot size, but they did prefer to cluster. And I thought I'd show you the Act 20 for those properties that are divisible. So again, this is a smaller subcomponent. It's about 518 parcels that this represents. Well, 518 property owners, excuse me. Since there are more, multiple parcels, property owners have multiple parcels, so the total number of parcels is greater. It's about 1,000.
Can you show us a little bit more of the north end of the county? Those up there indicate that they didn't respond.
So the gray area in front of the park properties that didn't respond.
I've got a question.
Sure.
I noticed that there's a lot of space where there's no markings. That means that they're either not, that means they're not ag and they're not forest. Does that mean they're rural or public?
They are rural.
So
they also could be resourced less than 10 acres.
Right.
So remember, we only this is a sub, very refined subset of the data. So.
Well, I'm curious because it looks like a little here, a little there, a little scattered parcels throughout the county that interspersed. I would think there would be much more contiguous land that would be resource land out there, that would be ag or forest.
Well, and what I'll do is show you the ag and the forest together.
pretty sparse.
So that's the of the ag in the forest.
Which doesn't include any of the timberland on the east side of the town, which is mostly timberland.
Correct. So this is a forest.
Yep, our forest.
Yeah, but it doesn't include the FR 40
80.
Yes.
Yeah,
correct. It doesn't include 80, and we did all publicly owned lands.
So like all the warehouse owned.
Right. That's correct.
So warehouse is 80. Correct.
Just 40.
Yes.
And there's a lot of timber in smaller areas. Well, on the open space program.
Is that just the timber limit?
So this is just the FR40, the larger.
To a great extent, this is a reflection of how little, how many.
Did you just send it to people that had certain size lot size?
Yes.
Yes.
Because there could be situations where owners have divided it into smaller lots, and they may be all 5-acre parcels, but they may have 40 acres together, but they've just done that in the past to keep that, be able to do the 5 acres. So you may have some of that out there, too.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's correct.
And Pete would not. So this also, you said it's kind of seems scattered. 50% of the agricultural activity in Clark County occurs on agriculturally designated land. The other 50% occurs on rural designations. And we know that because of the work, and we actually had that work done for us as part of the 2007 plan. A lot of that is in current use. So we have a lot of land that is in current use for agriculture that is not actually zoned for agricultural use. It's one of the oddities of Clark County is that we have a lot of land that was that is not designated, but that is used, and a lot of land that is designated and is like somewhat found. So it's more about what's the soil like in the area, and Falaita alone between Vancouver and Ridgefield, and well, what's Falaita now is the best soil we have. And so I mean, you see a lot of activity in that area, and then you can see it around Ridgefield. I mean, it's surrounded.
Just related to that, I read some of the comments that were returned on the postcards, and some of them said, I'm surrounded by R5s, and yet on my land is zoned Ag 20, why can't I be like my neighbors? And I just wonder about those questions where you've got little inconsistencies in areas like that.
My understanding is that the survey was sent to property owners who have property that would be legally divisible into 10-acre parcels if we're talking about Ag 20. So if it's somebody who owns 9 acres that's zoned for Ag 20, they can't go any smaller even if the zone were changed to Ag 10. So the survey was not sent to those property owners. And there are a great number of parcels in the county that are substandard in terms of being smaller than the minimum lot size in the zone.
Got that. Those comments that are included in a little package here actually were the comments that came back from those that did participate and did mm-hmm. respond. And it's probably an exception. I don't want to get off on a rabbit path, but it does ask. It makes me wonder about the overall consistency of maybe handling and addressing some of those cases that may appear to be kind of isolated and not blended with their surrounding areas.
I think
that's a tangent.
I think one of the things we started with, and we all have to recognize, is when we started this project, is rural zoning, rural parcel equalization is what it is. And rightly or wrongly, with whatever happened, whatever was adopted in 1994, this is what we have to work with today.
And so that's really not up for
It can be. That's up to you. We're saying we have a landscape, we have parcelization, we have zoning that's out there now. Is there, what can we do with what we have today? Decisions that were made in the past could be, I suppose, could be revisited, but what's happened in 1994, we set rural zoning. That rural zoning was upheld or reaffirmed in both 2004 and 2007. And so we're taking a look and seeing what we can do with what we have today.
It's because of 94, it's because of 90 and 91 when the Growth Management Act was passed. And I wrote it down just so that it reminds us why why, because the question is, why wouldn't we be talking to the rural residential folks, the people who are in current use but have rural residential zoning? It's because it's a lot easier to split their properties up than it is ag parcels.
Yes.
Because they're under state law, under the Growth Management Act, they aren't as protected, those rural residential parcels, as parcels that are zoned for agricultural use. And the Goal 8 says that we have a responsibility, to maintain and enhance natural resource-based industries, including productive timber, agricultural and fisheries industries, and encourage the conservation of productive forest lands and productive agricultural lands, and discourage incompatible uses. All of those have been argued in court. There's a 14-part test to de-designate ag that was done by Lewis County, and it becomes, that is one of the big chains that's hung around our necks, is figuring out how to encourage and not create conflicting uses and all of that. So it's why it becomes so difficult and why we are subservient to the decisions of the past, because that set the framework for what we deal with.
Sure. So I assume the focus today is not considering any other uses or any switching ag to something else, or forest to something else, that's not on the table.
Right.
Just simply to focus on the two questions of the minimum parcel size.
The goal, I think, today, we want correct direction from you is what can we do prospectively, given what we have, given the limits that Commissioner Stewart just alluded to, and Chris continues to chime in our ear about you got to be true to the GMA, you got to be true to the GMA. What can we do?
Sure.
And the idea was, in this new director is to go say, for this particular phase, what would people prefer?
And I think our goal is to not change the zoning,
yeah,
but because of the values of the property more, somebody wants to expand their ag or their forest, can't do so without purchasing a larger amount of which is not affordable. So one of the caveats of this is that it would allow somebody wanting to expand their ag or their forest area that they could do so in a more affordable way.
Actually, Tom, that's not true. If someone has 20 acres and there's 20 acres next to them, they could divide it and sell that 10 acres off. That's land rights. They can sell it off. It just wouldn't be a buildable parcel.
But we're not talking about changing the zoning here.
I know, I'm just saying that someone could buy 10 acres from their neighbor and they could...
It's legal, but not buildable.
Yeah, right. They could divide it and do it and sell it and make a taxable lot and sell it, and the other person would own it. It just couldn't be one that they could actually go and build on.
Or forth, and that's my intent of what I'm telling.
But the difference is that if they divide it into a legal but not a buildable lot, one of the things that we hear is, I'd really like for my kids to be able to farm with me.
Yeah.
But, you don't know a lot of adult children that want to live in the same house as their parents.
Yeah.
Still. So it happens a lot more now. But then to have them have their own 10 acres where they can build, have a home and still be farming, the family plot, but have two separate residences, that would require a different zone.
Yes.
Right?
That's one of the key things is, they can do that now. It's just you don't have that ability to be buildable.
Right. Well, and forgive me, I'm doing the groundbreaking for the Parade of Homes, but the easier part of it, for me at least, is we are talking about keeping the same zoning, agricultural zoning, just going from 20 to 10. And we have great information to create a paper trail that small-scale agricultural operations have become not only more prevalent but more successful in Clark County. That we have seen an increase in the number of farms, even though we've seen a decrease in the actual acreage that's been farmed. So we have great data to support looking at smaller acreage opportunities for young farmers, for farmers who are looking to have their family live by them. And we have that data, and we just need to make our case with that. The clustering for me is a different animal. That when people are asking for clusters, one of the provisions is we, you know, we are supposed to discourage incompatible uses. And just the history of going through the comp plan and talking with the Walkers, where the Walkers had a cluster built as part of their farm when that was legal, and the cluster of residential development around them drove them out of farming. They had wars with their neighbors because the neighbors moved in because it was pretty, right? And then all of a sudden he started spraying and running the tractor at 5 a.m. They didn't think it was so pretty anymore, so then they start complaining. And they know they can't complain as a nuisance because farming is allowed, so they just get in a war with him. So it created an incompatibility between the two, so that I have concerns with, and there's, you know, and I would leave it to staff to figure out, are there ways that we can deal with that, that we can balance that, we can create expectations such that homeowners moving in there know that their little mansion on 1 acre is next to a working farm, you know, and so that's the one piece that I'm concerned about.
Yeah, and I think, commissioners, that gets us to the policy options. Unless you have questions on the results of the census, one of the policy options that we are presenting to the commissioners, I'm going to be very quick. As you observed, our current resource designation, both ag and forest, have been challenged and is compatible or consistent with the current state statute. So we are in compliance when it comes to the resource designation. We are working through now to up the surface, do the mineral land update based on information we receive from the state. So one of the policy options, given that we are in compliance as things start today, is to do nothing, leave the current resource as is. That may not be the best option that the board may want to consider, given the results, but it is up here. Given the second option is, given the results, the board could consider going to maintaining the resource designation, but going to much smaller parcel size. We have to still build our case that is really what is happening in terms of farming activity, and that will continue to support farming. So the board can choose to go to Ag 10 and Forest 20. We did suggest, you know, coupling that with some clustering options. If the board is not comfortable with that, we can drop that clustering requirement. And finally, the board, we put in R20. If the board decide to go to Forest 20 or Ag 20, staff will have to look at where the current R20s are boarding Ag and Forest and decide what the appropriate zoning will be. In other words, if you have R20 and the board decide to go to Ag 20, if you are boarding that by R20, you can now go to R10. But if you are R20 and you're boarding at Forest now 20, you remain R20. So those are the options that we presented to the board for your consideration. I know we have our legal counsel, and that's why we have Pete here. Any of these options has potential to lead us into some speculations, and that may potentially impact property tax. So that's where we have a slide for Pete to chime in for the potential tax implication depending on what option the board chooses. And if you are in current use and this change prompts you to want to come out of the current use, what are the potential tax liability for property owners? So I don't want to leave that out there, but I just want to make sure that Pete can chime in and have that conversation with the board.
Oliver, I think that the board is pretty much in agreement the direction that we were trying to go was under option 2, was an opt-in or opt-out for the landowner, and so his best wishes. Do you have something to add?
Yes, the show your work requirement of this, that basically says this is based on evidence and the real world documentation supports this, that would actually move us in the direction of fulfilling the intent of the GMA, and one of those pieces of the of documentation is that is the federal census that is going to be released sometime in February still?
February 20th.
Okay, and we're going to be looking at that. We don't know what's in that yet, but we expect it's going to provide insight that would help us to know whether or not we're moving in the right direction, right?
We believe so, because we have trend data from 1997, 2002, 2007, since the farm census is done every 5 years.
And so that's called the farm census?
It's the farm census done by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And the last time I checked the website, they said they would release the 2012 census data on February 20th. So that's another bit of information that may be helpful or not, but that's the last I knew that's today.
So the results of that census is going to be released then. I would think that if we wanted to know what questions they asked before it's compiled, that we'd not be able to have access to that now, so we have an idea how relevant it's going to be to this conversation, right?
We can try. I'm not sure whether the Fed will release that to us, but we will certainly ask Commissioner.
So, David, when you say opt-in or opt-out, are you saying that you are going to go and do, or Tom, a certain window under which the person must decide whether or not they want to go a smaller zoning or not?
Right. We leave that up to the landowner. So, for example, we saw that in the survey, some said they don't want change. We're not going to change.
Okay, but there would have to be a certain window of time where people would have to choose either the opt-in or opt-out.
Probably between now and the time we do our consult plan.
Okay.
And really that comes down to the question, so glad you're here, Chris, to answer whether or not this has to be a blanket and consistency, you're not going to checkboard anything, or it would allow those landowners to say, I want in, and these other ones out, and you end up with some kind of a checkboard. And so what's legally possible for us that's defensible?
Well, I have difficulty thinking that a pure opt-in, opt-out system would be compliant with GMA. I don't think that just we want to do this, we want to do that makes much sense because of the very sorts of things that you were mentioning before. You know, a couple of years down the road, somebody says, but I'm Ag 20, but I'm surrounded by all these smaller things. Just how we work that out to give maximum choice to landowners but make it rational according to GMA, I haven't figured that one out yet, and I'm sure that planning staff has some better ideas on it than I do.
Well, because here's the problem, and that is that if you say for any period of time that owners have the right to opt in to R5 zoning, basically then you have R5 zoning, right? Because you can opt in at any time. And so then the higher zoning really means
nothing. Yes.
So if I understand correctly, it's questionable whether or not the option of opt-in, opt-out is going to comply with GMA and pass the legal tests. And if that be true, then the most safe thing for us to do, legally defensible, would be just simply to say either make the change from FR40 to FR20, Ag 10, 20 to Ag 10, for the whole, all of those, or not at all, right?
For all of those, or perhaps a portion, no, sure. In depending on where they are located.
Well, I guess the problem with that is you damage that if you go back and make a broad sweep with it. Those that didn't want to do it don't see anything in the fork in their future, an advantage of changing that. And if you go back and mandate that they divide their property up, that could increase their property taxes, and that was one of the things that we were accused of for allowing the option.
I understand the concern there, but nothing would mandate that anybody divide their property. Anybody who wants to retain a larger sized property certainly would be able to do that. What a smaller size minimum lot size would enable those who wanted to divide to a smaller size to do that.
The Commissioners, the only thing I could add to that, and Pete can correct me if I'm wrong, even if you have provided for Ag 20 to now go to Ag 10, and I choose not to do so, there are potential for speculations on what the likelihood or the value of your property means now that you have the option to go to 10. Yes. Does the likelihood of potentially seeing your taxes go up or not?
And I can talk about that.
Right.
And the first thing is, you know, under state law, we are required to assess property at 100% of market value.
Yes.
So when anything happens that increases the value of the land, I am required to value that at 100% of market value.
Yep.
The smaller lot size refers to the ability to build a structure, right, typically a home, on a smaller parcel. What property values are based upon utility of the property. You have more utility, the value goes up. And what that means is if you have 20 acres and now you can only build one home on it, it's going to have a certain value. The second you say that 20 acres, it may already have a home, but you can have another 10-acre home site, it then becomes more value because there's more utility for the parcel. And that means that then, of course, the value of the land and the market is going to go up, and therefore, with 100% of market value, the assessed value is also going to increase. One of the things I do want to point out is, even though we're going in and we have an increase of land value within the county, that doesn't count as new construction. So just because all of a sudden it goes from maybe $200,000 to a 20-acre lot's worth $250,000, that extra $50,000 can't be counted as new construction. You only actually get new construction when you divide that lot and you build a house on it, and then it's just a structure that counts as new construction. But when you get into that, a lot of these properties are in current use. And so then we really will need to work with landowners that are in current use. What is the strategy? When do you want to go and take your property out of current use? Because if you break it into...
I think that's a whole different question that you're going into.
Yeah.
And that's not the intent of what we're talking about.
Yeah, but it is a strategy in terms that we will need to work with homeowners to understand, because if you take it out of current use and then divide it, the current use implications are going to be much different on you than you divide it into smaller lots and keep it in current use and then take it out later.
They can apply to do that today. So,
do I understand correctly that the freedom for these landowners to place their property in current use, in other words, they get a reduced property tax because they're using it for ag or they're using it for forest long-term wise, that none of our decisions that we're debating here today, considering today, would in any way affect that freedom, right?
Well, not necessarily. And that if you have a 20-acre parcel out there, you can go and put 20 acres with no income verification into the current use program. If you have less than 10 acres that you're putting into current use, you have to show that you actually have farm income.
We're not doing anything
less than 20.
So there's another requirement that needs to be met if their physical parcel size is less than 20 acres.
Under current use.
But we're not changing the parcel size.
I know,
if they were to divide their parcel smaller, at that point, whether or not the zoning is independent of all this.
Yes.
So I just want to make sure we understand that none of the policies that we are considering today in any way affect the freedom for them to be able to opt in or opt out of the current use program.
Correct.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah. That's a kind of broad conversation.
I also want to, I think there's an unintended consequence here that I think none of us want, not the property owners, none of the staff here, and that is that if we end up with the 10-acre smaller parcel zoning, that property taxes would go up. And that ends up being a tax shift
yes.
from others to the rural lands, which is exactly what we don't want to do. And so one question is there anything, any options available to us, policy-wise, that would put into the assessor's hands something that would not make that happen?
No, because, David, what you're doing is you're making their property more valuable. And when you make their property more valuable, the percent of the total value of the county goes up, and that's why it shifts over. You're only going to get that property tax shift if you actually increase the value of their property.
How significant is that shift? Let's suppose you have a landowner that has a farmhouse, and they have 20 acres, and then zone 20 without clustering options. And we designate that. Now you have the option to go clustering if you want to, but you don't. And now you're zoned 10 acres rather than 20, but they don't make any change. I know you'd have to guess at it,
yeah.
But what percentage can we expect? What percent will their property tax increase? Well,
here's what we can do, David, is we can look at, we can say, how much does, if you look at in a 1 acre zone and in a 5 acre zone, what do those lots sell for versus, 10 and 20 acre zones? And what you'll find is in a 1 acre zoning, a 1 acre lot will sell for a certain amount. And then you get to a 5 acre zone, you'll find out that the 5 acre lot typically sells about the same.
Yeah.
Because really what drives the value of any of these lots is the ability to build
You've
a home.
It. Right.
And so when you have the ability to build a home, people are willing to pay a certain amount, and that's actually what drives the value of the land. So all of a sudden you have 20 acres and you have the potential of having two homes on it, I mean, then you greatly increase the value of the land there.
Two kind of cases there. The potential for doing something in the future on your property, dividing it, clustering it. At that point, if they were to actually do that, then everybody expects that their property taxes are going to go up at that time. But as soon as we give them the option of doing that, at that point, we're not trying to in any way raise their property taxes. And so would it really be right to increase their property taxes on a potential?
Yes, because... Yes. The potential is what people are paying for.
Yes.
Everything out in the market, people buy lots because of the potential to buy a home. And so when you're actually, the only reason that these people's property taxes would go up would be if the market value of their land increases. And if the market value of their land increases under state law, we have to do it at 100% of market value. So we really don't have an option, under state law to do it any differently.
So there'd be no way that we could somehow prevent their property taxes from increasing.
Commissioner, and I think what Pete is saying is this, unless, and I don't see that, but unless you do this and then you say that 10 acres is just going to be used for farming, it's not buildable, then there is no value on that. That will get you there, but I think it's going to be very hard to implement. To say we'll do this with no making it a non-buildable site.
It's like making an illegal lot. It's just that's not
sensible. It's not what your goal is trying to get to.
Yes.
And this is a important piece of information that maybe was not considered by all of the people who responded. That's a pretty dramatic response. We got 72 to 80% of people saying we want to be able to have this option. I would think that if we were going to be really cover the bases and say we're here to maximize your private property rights and to fulfill the intent of GMA and to maximize the success of the use of the land, let me finish.
Okay.
That we could go back to them and say, if your property taxes were to, if you selected that option, also resulted in an unavoidable property tax increase by a guesstimate of 10% or something, would you still do that? And because at this point, that would be the one main reason why they would potentially change from a yes to a no answer.
Yeah, but I just want to tell you, is maximizing property rights maximizes the value of the land. And so that's where you right. have a situation. If you have more rights, you have more utility, you have more value in the land.
And so we could let them make that choice.
Yeah.
The
and see, but the thing is I think most of the people, why they came back and they said that they wanted to do it, is they recognized that it would increase
and
value.
And I think
land.
That's something we can do as we come back. Yeah. We're going to be in correspondence again. We're going to do a more major yeah. obviously. We're way out of time, but I wanted to see if I had any questions of the people that are here today that we haven't answered, that we may answer. Do you have anybody have any questions? Certainly anybody.
Yeah. You know, when we're talking 10 and 20 acre plots, we're talking hobby farms. We're not talking ag. No way you can afford to buy a combine and grow 10 acres of wheat. You know, there should be some kind of differentiation there. They're hobby farms. The other thing that affects the value a lot is the ability to have a well. The difference between a dry land crop and an irrigated crop is huge. And the Department of DOE basically has a moratorium on ag wells. You know, it's like a 10-year process to be denied. So, you know, how can you have an economic farm? The old joke is, you know, farmer wins a $1 million lottery and they ask him what he's going to do. He says, I'm going to farm until I'm out of money. Because you can't make any money. You know, how could you get out of poverty level on a 20-acre yeah. farm in Clark County?
What are hobby farms? One of the things that I've have been out visiting our specialty farm, whether it be an herb farm, we have more wineries coming into play, so we have more like a specialty farm. I can't imagine how you make a living on 40 acres, depending on the product that you're farming.
Ma'am? You said with what we would say, 40 acres, it forces you to be a hobby farm. If you keep
crossing, it could be. Or forest. Under forest. Very similar.
It seems to me like we're working in two different roles here. GMA says, let's take and protect some open space. Let's take and have economically viable ag ground. But if we continue to develop and build and parcel this stuff up, it'll go away. So, depending on how intense and sincere we are about preserving that aggregation, why can't we look at something that would facilitate increasing parcel size? If you can, because the value that Peter talked about is done on land tables, your value per acre for a 5-acre parcel is going to be less than your value per acre for a 20-acre. If you aggregate these parcels, two 20s into a farm, but still give them the option of having two building sites on that 40-acre parcel, then what you've done is you've allowed the farmer and his offspring to have two homes on one piece of ground that is valued lower, which means that it's more economically feasible to do the farming on that property. And you have the workforce there. The value of the improvements is a different thing. And people don't seem to object about paying for their houses.
And I think that's,
so I think that's kind of a different perspective of how you look at this thing, trying to address the legislative history that we have in this state that says, let's protect ag economically.
And I think that's where we go with this, because we're not changing the zoning. What we're doing, we're allowing the farmer some options as to whether he could bring in a family member or something like that. And also, if you want to increase the size of your farm, it's easier to go in there and buy a 10 or 20 acre ag or forest zone property and add to the ag or forest that I already have.
You could actually, instead of two separate tax parcels, you could combine those into one separate tax parcel, move it up into the next echelon of valuation for your land.
Yeah.
So you could be paying taxes on the 40-acre parcel, which is typically less per acre than on the 20-acre parcel.
That's something they can do now. That really doesn't have to do with what we're dealing here. You're dealing with is actually changing the zoning and what the impact would be.
Real quick, any other questions?
Another comment is,
yes.
I was over in Idaho in a town that was nearly dead, and I talked to a farmer, and he said, well, the town was hopping when everybody had a family on 160 acres, you know, had a homestead, so it was a family, it hired help. This one guy farms 13,000 acres. That's why the town's there. Because you can't afford to farm a tiny spot. It's not, you know, we're wishing we're back in the 30s. You know, we have a farm of 30 acres where one family had a dairy, hand milk, you know, throw horses around. That's just not going to happen anymore.
It's definitely a changing society. So. We're way out of time. Anything from staff?
Yeah, yes, commissioners, again, our goal today was to present the result and consider these policy options. We want to walk away with some directions from the board.
That was that option two. I think that we have a general census here at the board.
Okay.
To work in that direction.
Okay. We'll pursue option two. I know that Commissioner Stewart was concerned about the clustering requirement. We'll revisit that, but we will leave with consideration for option two. And then I think the conversation that Pete also brought to the discussion, we wanted to make sure that the board is aware of the potential tax implications so that no one is surprised when you begin to hear folks in the future maybe saying I wasn't. Thank you, Pete. I greatly appreciate working with you on this.
Okay. Thank you all very much. Gordy, you were right. You need twice as much time. Yep. Thank you all.
Thank you for calling us, Commissioner.